Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Welcome in Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a hump day. Thank you. Appreciate it as always. Good morning to you, Randy. How are you?
What's happening, man? They did it.
It's perfect that it's Wednesday. We're halfway there, right?
Yes.
It's like the 500 of the week.
Yeah, man.
And the Braves are finally 500 on the
500.
Season.
500. Oh, man. What a great night of sports. If you love the Braves, obviously, them getting a nice win last night. Pitching was great. Raffy was in Raffy stayed out there in center field, so we didn't have to see him.
Oh.
Yeah, we didn't see him. I know Bo Texas.
Iglesias didn't play.
I know. He was out there in center field.
Yeah.
I know Bo Texas said he got a new walk-in song, so we'll have to wait until next time.
It could be tonight. That's a little inside info for Bo Johnson there, possibly.
It did appear that Iggy was going back to his walk-up music that he used last year.
Which was what? Because this year he had switched to Drake.
I don't think it was Daddy Drake. Yankee, not but Drake. It was a Daddy Yankee type. You know that Daddy Yankee beat?
Yes. Go back. Daddy Yankee gives me more hype than
if there's a Cuban
like
rapper.
Kendrick. It was Kendrick,
that's probably who it is. But yeah, he was using Kendrick this year.
Okay. Yeah. Go back to your roots, man.
I know we'll talk about the game, but the highlight for me was the Ronald Acuña home run. I don't care what level it was. I don't give a damn who was pitching. If they were pitching underhand, I don't care.
Yeah, Ronald Acuña played baseball. And hit a home run.
And now.
Period.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I care about. I saw, and he loved it. The trot, he had the same trot, all those things. But, watching that, then seeing the news, he's going to play in Gwinnett tomorrow, up there by the crib.
Yeah, we wondered kind of like what the timeline was.
Yeah.
It's like, what does he have to do against the FCL guys to prove that he's ready to face maybe a slightly higher level of competition? Well, that was it.
Yep.
Hit a home run. Hit a home run, play six innings, he went 1-for-3, and they're like, all right, that's enough of that.
All right.
Come on up here and play some AAA games. So he's going to play tomorrow with the Stripers. Don't know how long he'll play. What I'd imagine they'll do is, and I guess Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday would be their homestand.
Right.
If they go on the road, he's not going with them.
No.
Like,
no.
Ronald Acuña's not riding the Greyhound bus to Charlotte or wherever they're going next.
No, he's definitely not doing that.
So, you know, maybe he makes a trip over to wherever, like wherever the next nearest minor league stop is or whatever, just to sort of keep rehabbing. But, he made his way out of that level pretty quick.
Yeah,
and
man.
Now he'll start his rehab tomorrow with Gwinnett, and hopefully that goes well. And honestly, who knows? Like, there's no marriage to the 3-week timeline.
No.
You can call him up whenever you want within that 3 weeks. It's just a matter of you have to do it within the 3 weeks.
Right.
He goes to Gwinnett and plays well over the weekend. They can say, all right.
That's
fine. We're good.
See you Monday.
Yeah. Could
see
do
you Monday, but yeah, it was good to see.
Sign me up for that.
It was good to see him, but yeah, a good win for the Braves yesterday. Obviously, we talked yesterday about Shirelli, another really good start after the one he had previously. Good to see Ozzie get something going.
It's just great.
Good to see Ozzie getting something.
I knew it was bad, and we had talked about it. I didn't have the number on it until they started mentioning it during the broadcast last night. He was 0-for-28.
I know, man.
Like
I
that's
know. It was. And I saw you
that's
saw early. I think it might have been his first at bat. He pops it out to the left. And you just see, just like, damn.
Yeah, he was so frustrated.
He was so frustrated.
You could tell he was a little closer, though, right? Like, because there was times, and there have been times this season, where he's at bats that just look
bad,
like non-competitive, either swinging at the first pitch or can't catch up to high fastballs or whatever. Like, over the last week or so, maybe not week or so, maybe the last couple days, it felt like he was getting a little bit better wood on the baseball. And then yesterday, that first hit was really good. Like, pulled it down the right field line, just really looked like he had good timing on it. And then he was able to kind of poke that little one into center field to get Drake Baldwin the insurance run. Love an insurance run. Nice to see.
Yes.
Because, you know, then just rest on their laurels with 3 or 4 runs like normal, like driving in a little bit of extra to help at the end. And said it a couple times now, say it again. They got to find a way to get Drake Baldwin in the lineup.
Yeah, man.
I know he caught last night, but they got to find a way to have that man in the lineup.
That young fella is playing his ass off right now, man. And I'm talking about he is, as advertised, as coming out of the spring. And, I mean, he is just, you know, has had a lot of great moments and everything. We know right now it seems like he's catching every two out of three games with Murph. And Murph's playing well, too, also.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's going to be one of those things where we talked on Monday, do you dangle him out? I'm talking about not the young boy. You might be able to get more for Drake Baldwin than Sean Murphy, possibly.
I don't know.
But, I mean, you want to try and get – You don't think a young catch like him would get more?
I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe.
I would think so. Yeah, I would think so. But I mean, you know,
I don't think they're going to do that. As much as it's kind of fun to talk about. Like,
no.
I think what you probably do is you just ride. I mean, that's about as good of a catching duo in baseball.
Yeah, I saw
as there
this
is
catch
right
yesterday.
Now.
They are.
Yeah, so
they
are. You just probably ride with that, and that's what they've done. Like over the last handful of years, you know?
When Travis d'Arnaud had it going,
when it was d'Arnaud and Contreras,
yes.
And then it was d'Arnaud and Murphy, and now it's Murphy and Baldwin. You like to have the two catching options so both those guys don't get burned out. Problem is, you got a guy who's on an absolute heater right now. He's your best hitter, and you can't find a way to get him in the lineup every day because you want to play the other catcher, and you can't DH him because that would mean Ozuna's just not in the lineup.
Right.
So it's tricky. I don't know if there is another option. We'll have Grant in an hour and a half or so, and I can't imagine that there would be. Like, you're not going to stick him in the outfield.
No.
You're not going to – I don't think you're going to stick him in the outfield. You're not going to stick Ozuna in the outfield. I think there's been a number of times where that – could have been an option over the last couple
right.
of years, and they've opted not to do it. So it seems like Marcell Ozuna's days with a glove on his fielding hand are over, which is fine. We've seen it. But yeah, man, really, really good to see them get back to 500. Maybe that's a little bit of a mental hurdle that they could put behind them and go on a little run here. The Nationals aren't particularly good.
They're
so
right.
Hopefully you can continue and sweep them at home and get a couple games over 500 before you go to Boston. Cool to see Mike Soroka out there last night. He looked good.
Yeah.
I know he's still working his way back to like a normal pitch count coming off of the forearm injury that he had earlier in the year, but went four innings, did give up a couple of runs. Good, and, you know, guy who did a lot of good work here as a young player in Atlanta, and then some unfortunate fluky injury stuff, and, you know, maybe he can make his way back to being that type of pitcher again someday, but good to see him out there last night. Funny, we were talking about it before the show because – he had kind of one of those fluky Achilles
right.
that, I don't want to say fluky, like guys, you know, guys hurt their Achilles playing sports, but very similar in look, the first one, to what Jason Tatum had, to mm-hmm. what Damian Lillard had, to just what we've seen kind of across the world of sports over the last handful of years.
Because they're expected, Bunk. You're just making a routine, something you've done.
It's something they've all done a million times.
Thousands times.
Yeah.
You've done this thousands of times. You come off the mound to go get a slow dribbler and go throw it over to first. Jason Tatum, the ball was being stolen, so you're trying to react and change directions. I mean, it's so many different things why this happens, and I know there's so many different explanations that people try, to explain why these are happening so much more frequent now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I know Jason Tatum, you know, the dude towards Achilles previous night went and had surgery yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, and so I know people that had to wait a while to have the surgery. So, I mean – it's all about the timeline of recovery, how the wound heals, all those everything. It's a miserable, miserable injury, and it's a miserable, miserable rehab because you can't do nothing for, I don't know, like 6 weeks because you got to let that tendon heal and the foot has to be propped in a certain position.
Yeah.
And once you're out of that, you got to have these lifts. I mean, it's so much that goes into it.
Well, it's one of those weird ones, too, where it just feels like everybody's timeline is different.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's going to be about a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then to get back to your normal self, they often say it's not the first year back, it's the second year back. Some people are faster than others. Some people never recover from it.
How long was Kirk? Kirk was like 9 months, wasn't it?
Or so.
Or
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins was 9 months or so, but he certainly wasn't like
– right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different timelines to it. Just like the ACL. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just, you know, it's just all about, you know, mainly how your body is.
Literally every body is different.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all getting state-of-the-art medicine and surgery
and treatment and everything.
And everything you could possibly want. It's just a matter of how your body responds to it. And obviously in Soroka's case, he had the second Achilles injury while rehabbing from the first Achilles injury. I don't know. You mentioned it. There's just a lot of theories out there as to why this is happening. It seems like more than it ever has before. And I don't know. I'm sure that there are some sports medicine folks like researching it
and
trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I saw Nick Van Exel tweet. He was like, that's because they wear low tops. I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know. I
it's mean, as good of a theory as any, as I've heard.
I mean, we were talking, because me and you were talking about this before the show. I was like, well, I remember me being a kid, the first one I ever remember hearing about was Dominique.
Yeah, he wore high tops.
Dominique wore high tops. Yeah. Larry Bird tore his twice, I think.
Yeah, he had real high tops.
He had real high tops. So, I mean, I don't know. Is it overtraining? I don't want to put it on that.
Well, that's another theory. It could be. That's something that has been talked about.
Yeah, I mean, the overtraining of the body and things like that, not allowing your joints and everything to heal. I mean, not necessarily to heal, just to rest.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure that, like you said, I'm sure there's like a panel or something out there. There are world-renowned Achilles doctors. I'm sure they're all putting their brains together to see how it works.
Yeah, they're loving it.
They're loving it because they're keeping them in business.
They're loving it.
Keeping them in
all
business.
These Achilles surgeries they get to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just in this era of, you know, we get very excited, we, not us, but some people get very excited about this era of sports medicine and more information than ever and all this stuff. It just feels like we're dealing with injuries more than we ever have.
I don't care.
Now, it might be teams being more cautious than ever, like with guys, because it's just like, all right, we know this, so we're not going to do this with you. We're monitoring this number, this level or whatever as it relates to your fitness, and you've gotten here and we don't want you past it, so we're going to scale you back. I think a lot of it is like franchises being overcautious with the information that have.
No doubt about it.
But that's not this. Like that's just like that's load management and pitch count and stuff like that. That like the actual rupturing of an Achilles tendon is a different situation than that. It's just weird to be in this era of the most information we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more than we've ever had injuries like that, and nobody knows why.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not good.
Yeah, I don't think, it's definitely not good. And we can talk about all this advanced training and stuff and all that, and the athletes are much bigger, faster, and stronger. That should help you, right?
I would think.
If you're bigger, faster, and stronger, you got all this damn nutrition and all this other stuff that we didn't have, but yet we weren't hurt like y'all.
Maybe just bigger and faster. And we were. Maybe not stronger.
And we were more physical. That's the thing about it. It's just what it is. Everything about it, from baseball, football, it was more physical. It was just a physical-ass sport. And now I'm not saying the physicality, but some of it has been. And now it's all more spread-oriented, done football, all of it. And, I mean, I don't know.
I don't either.
I ain't never used no damn bands that would do nothing. I only put bands around them ones. How about it?
Different use for the term bands. All right, we'll come back. We'll tell you what's trending, including what Brian Snitker's talking about here.
They like talking about him because it's kind of a rough ride for him. So,
yeah, like it's what we do. It's talk. We'll find out who coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Slaps it the other way. Get down, ball. It will. Baldwin coming home. Throw to the plate is late. Ozzie Albies with an RBI hit, and Atlanta's up 3.
What were the various things going through your mind when you saw Ozzie Albies get that bloop single there to drive in Drake Baldwin from second base?
Run!
That's what you're thinking?
Yeah.
From Drake?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think when you watched him run?
Because
I was watching him run closely.
He's awkward.
Yeah, but not slow.
No, he can move.
Yeah.
But it's like a different kind of fat. Like Ronald Acuña is super fast.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Drake Baldwin can run, but he runs like me. Limbs be going everywhere.
But he looked faster than your average catcher.
I mean, he's younger than the average catcher.
Like maybe he could do more than just catch.
I'm not going to get into it about putting him in the damn field.
That's what I was looking at when he was running. I was like, that guy's pretty fast. Put him in left field.
I'm not going to put him in the field. It's not going to do it.
Let me put it differently than that.
All right.
Put him in the lineup. Okay, we got to get him in the lineup.
Where are you going to put him at?
Somewhere.
All right.
He's the best hitter on the team now.
Can he play first base?
Yeah. I mean, the guy who's playing first base isn't doing much right now. Okay. He's having a tough go of it.
Yeah. I mean.
Probably. Let him get over there.
Who was it? Who were we like this with?
Everyone.
Everyone.
Every player.
Every damn player. Remember, damn, Austin Riley. Oh, he played outfield. Yeah.
And he did. Austin Riley did play the outfield a couple times.
Yeah, then he went.
It was okay.
Then he went off the cliff.
Well, that was the hitting part.
But
you had to get him in there because he had Donaldson, right?
Yes.
And Camargo. And there was all kinds of different guys.
Johan Camargo.
Hey, World Series champion, Camargo.
Yeah, man. But, I love the kid. He is really showing up and showing
out.
Just
saying he looks like a fluid athlete running. Put an outfield glove on his hand. Just see how it looks.
It's not like Verdugo's look like gold glove material.
No, he has not. He's been awful.
Yeah.
He's an outfielder.
Balls.
He's an outfielder, though. That's the only thing.
But then one team had the guy out there ran in the wall and broke his arm. Yeah. So it's not like you got to be graceful.
I mean, no. You know? But I mean,
I don't want that to happen to Drake Baldwin.
I mean, and again, I go back to all the things when we were kids. Like, we play every position. It didn't matter. We could catch a fly ball.
Sure.
Their trajectory is nothing. We could run it out. We could do all those different things.
They had Jorge Soler in the outfield last year.
Yeah.
The guy couldn't do anything.
He's an outfielder by trade.
By title.
Okay. By trade, by title. You know?
The man was a designated hitter with a mitt on.
But, I mean. I don't know where you put him.
I don't know.
I don't even.
I realize this is nonsense.
He's playing good.
He's playing really well.
It's really cool to watch this young man. You always love to watch young prospects come up and play. Hopefully, they don't deal him like they did the last great great prospect that I loved at the catcher position. But you know, it's neither here nor there. He saw the value in Sean Murphy. Murph's been good when he's healthy for the most part, and they'll just continue to have this rotation. So, yeah. So, hopefully they go for the sweep tonight.
Tonight, tomorrow.
I mean, you got who's on?
Win the series tonight, though, with Bryce Elder on the mound.
Bryce Elder's on the mound. Still, he's fine.
He's been fine.
He's been better than I thought. Because we talk trash about this dude so much.
Yeah.
But he's been cool.
Well, I think you talk about you've gotten
from
him.
I'd like to see Ozzie get two more hits tonight. Two more hits for Ozzie tonight.
Okay.
Two more hits for Ozzie.
Yeah, I can get behind that.
Yeah, man, let's get it going.
But I think from what you've gotten from Elder, Smith-Shawver, and Grant Holmes from that back end of the rotation.
Adequate as hell.
And I guess that's not adequate. Really back end. That's more than half of your rotation right now. No, it's been really good, especially given the expectation for some of those guys. You're going to get Spencer Strider back at some point over the next week, whether it's this weekend or whatever. He's making his rehab simulated start today.
Where's that at?
That'll be up at the ballpark,
okay.
I would assume.
Okay.
And then when based on what they see from that, you get him back. So you go Strider, hopefully again. We did this before and then got Strider back, and then he hurt his hamstring playing catch.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can avoid any catch related injuries. But assuming you get Strider back for a while,
right.
Then Sale with him looking like his normal self again, Schwellenbach being really solid in the early part of the season, and then whether it's Shaver, Holmes, or Elder, like. It's pretty solid.
Yeah, man.
Like, you feel pretty good about that starting five.
And I think
starting six.
You'll always feel that as long as those guys you were just talking about, Grant Holmes and they continue to be consistent with it. They're going to have bad start because all pitchers do. But it's about being more consistent than anything. And if you can find a way to get a six-man rotation for as long as you could possibly have it, I think that's a win.
Yeah, I would be interested to see how they handle that.
Because
I think, you know, they've tried to get those extra starts or those extra days for Sale. If it's beneficial for him, wouldn't it be beneficial for
I would think so. I just
anybody
want,
else?
I just don't want Shaver to be that guy that's got to go. You know what I mean?
I don't. Yeah.
You know,
right now, I don't think he can be.
You know what I'm saying? If they want to go back to five, leave this kid up here. Mm-hmm. If you got to go six, as long as this kid's up here, then go six. Like you said, get Chris Sale some days. Take some of that burden off of Spencer Strider and everything. Unless Strider likes his route. Like, you know, one thing about, you know, the big dogs, they like their certain routine.
Yeah, that's
I like
true.
To go every 5 days.
True.
I don't like waiting an extra day to go.
That's
I like
true.
My, you know, so, I mean, it's all the.
Holmes was in their bullpen last year, too.
Yeah.
So, and he did a pretty good job with that. So, you know, that's another option if you wanted to put him out there as like a middle relief guy.
Right.
And, you know, get rid of somebody who's out there right now. I don't know who that would be. But anyway, Ronald Acuna also hit a home run last night in his first rehab start down in Florida. So he's not going to have to be in Florida anymore.
No, he will be. He's here already.
Yeah, he's
he's up there while I stand.
Going to play for the Gwinnett Stripers tomorrow night as he continued his rehab. Here's Brian Snitker talking about Schwellenbach.
He ran into some, you know, he'd misplace a pitch every now and then when he first got here. And but, you know, everything was kind of seamless. And, you know, now they're preparing for him and they're aware of him. And, those guys talk. I mean, I know our guys, when we run into players from other teams, they like talking about him because it's kind of a rough ride for them. So, they're aware of him, and he's going to have to continue just as he has.
They're damn sure aware of him on the first batter of the game.
That's my guy C.J. Abrams right there. That's what I was talking about yesterday.
Okay.
You go get C.J.
Did you see the second base yesterday? The ball hit towards in the second base, first base area yesterday for the Braves. Like how that ground.
Oh, the hops?
Yeah.
There was a couple hops at third base, too.
It's hoppy, man. The Braves got a hoppy ass infield.
I don't know. Maybe they're getting bad dirt.
I don't know, man. They got some hoppy ass infield, man.
They need to get a new dirt guy.
But, I mean, what's the biggest thing for young players at any, adjusting to what they adjust to you? You know what I mean? They figure things out, and then obviously you got to counteract that right there. That's what the great ones do. That's what the professionals do, because eventually people are going to figure out what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you've got to counteract that and come up with a different game plan.
The cool thing about Schwellenbach is he's got like 6 pitches.
Yes.
So it's like, all right, they seem keyed in on this one. We're not going to really throw that one tonight. We're going to go to my 5 other pitches that I could throw at a high level. I don't know if anybody fields their position better than him in baseball right now either. Like, he might be the best fielding pitcher in Major League Baseball currently.
He's very good.
Here's Jackson Cantwell, the 16-year-old that everyone was tuned in to yesterday to find out where he might play college football in 2 years from now.
Yeah, how long?
A couple years.
He ain't coming this fall, huh?
No, it's going to be a while. Maybe he'll reclassify. I don't know. He's a giant. Here he is talking about why he chose Miami.
Well, I think my response to it is it's not the same narrative people like Pete Nakos are pushing right now. I mean, I think that's just a false narrative that's why I'm choosing. And I think that, I mean, I think relationships won out in Miami. That was kind of what did it for me. I mean, they spent the most time with me. They put the most effort into recruiting me. I mean, I've got a lot of skin in the game with all these schools as far as like getting represented by Drew and making sure that I'm going to be fairly compensated. And I think every school has done a good job of that and being accommodating with that. And I think that anyone who would say otherwise about how I've done my recruitment has been just misled.
That doesn't sound like a 16-year-old.
He's very, very, very sharp. Yeah, very, very polished. Obviously,
skin in the game. I know fairly compensated.
I know Drew very, very well. Jeez. I knew Drew negotiated 3 contracts for me. He ain't letting you take less from nobody.
Yeah. No, all right. And you shouldn't.
And he shouldn't. Now, I don't give a damn where this boy went to school. I hope, hopefully, he does well and all those things like that. But ain't no guarantee he going to Miami. It changes mine in a heartbeat with all these new rules and everything like that. But, I mean, that's not the end of everything. Damn, we can't have everybody.
Not going to get everybody.
Can't get every damn body. And we got 4 other tackles on the roster already. That's ain't true. Played yet.
Some 5 stars on the roster.
Yeah, man. Currently. Good for him. I ain't going to get up in this young boy's all up in his mentions, mad at him for as he chose the school he wanted to go to. What is wrong with that?
Don't get in his mentions.
He can love football and go to Miami.
He can.
He can.
He can love football and get paid for it.
Exactly. Yeah, he don't got to come to Georgia.
My favorite thing is this is not a specifically Georgia thing.
Yeah.
For the case of this guy we're talking about right now, it's the example I'm going to use. But every fan base of every college football team does this. But when the guy picks your school, he loves football.
Yeah.
And he loves the program. Yeah. And he's in it for development. And he's built to the right stuff.
Right.
When he doesn't choose your school and he chooses the other school, he just cares about
money. Because who says it more than my boy Kirby? Kirby talks about it all the time. We want guys that want to play football and all this other stuff, blah, blah, blah.
Well, if you think that quarterback they got last week isn't getting a whole boatload of money.
You think he was cheap?
Then I got a bridge to sell you in
Smyrna. Man, please. What's the kid's name?
I don't know. This guy, Jackson Cantwell.
Yeah, Cantwell.
I already forgot the quarterback's
Cantwell
name.
Cantwell ain't finna derail that train up there in Athens, all right?
Nah, they'll be fine.
We'll be just fine.
They'll be fine.
Just fine. Oh, my goodness.
It is wild, though. Like, that dude sounded like a seasoned veteran.
Like, how many high school juniors call out media people like that by name?
Pete Nakos, narratives. He sounded like what Trey Hendrickson sounded like yesterday.
Pete Nakos.
That's a 16-year-old right there.
Damn, homie. Like, who put that in you? Who put that bug in your ear?
I don't know.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, but it's always funny when you get defensive about it, though. Like, we know you got cat. Now, my biggest thing, I've met and talked to a lot of these NIL collective people and everything like that. Don't ever believe the number that's out there.
Oh, so the $7.5 million that everyone says he's getting might not be true?
Yeah, it might not be true. It might not be true.
Well, but it might be.
But he's a good player.
It might not be.
He's a good player. He's from a small town in Missouri.
Yeah.
Close to where you were.
Thank God he gets to leave there.
Yeah, man.
He doesn't have to live in Springfield, Missouri anymore.
A 6'8"
certifiably
giant.
The worst place I've ever been. Now he gets to go to Miami.
Yeah, we got some listeners.
Now they are. They all moved. The Davis family moved to Charlotte, which, shockingly, is an upgrade over Springfield, Missouri. Damn. One of the few places that's worse than Charlotte. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk some NBA playoffs. Also, I don't think we've ever had this, like, very cliche sports radio conversation on this show about whether or not Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. And now we never have to. We never have to do it because of something that happened yesterday. What? So we'll be right back. Sports Radio 99 The Game.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here. Hump day. NFL no huddle just about 20 minutes from right now. We've got some good Trey Hendrickson audio. He showed up at the Bengals minicamp yesterday furious and ready to talk to the media about it, which was pretty awesome. Schedule comes out today as well.
Yep.
A lot of other games have leaked out. I think we have a pretty good idea of how many nationally televised games the Falcons are going to have this coming season. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to all that in about 20 minutes. Grant McCauley going to join us at 12:20 to talk some Braves as well.
But yeah, we were just talking, I guess, like all the people who were banned from baseball that have died, they all had to wait to be reinstated after Pete Rose died. Now,
right. Yeah.
I mean, there's no question that Pete Rose, what do they always say? You can't write the story of baseball without mentioning him.
Yeah, I don't think you can. That's he has the most hits.
Yeah, that's how great he was.
Yeah.
And then you look at it, because I love baseball guys that are on TV. Like, I love Buster Olney. I love Tim Curry.
Yeah, me too.
Even as funny looking as Jeff Passan is, I like him a lot.
Yeah, they all do a really good job.
I love looking at the guys on MLB Network.
Yeah,
I just love listening and talking to them and listening to them about talking about, you know, just as far as this situation right here. And it was just so funny because they stay away from the baseball part of the aspect of we're talking about the gambling and everything like that and how this could have been avoided, meaning he could have maybe been reinstated earlier if he would just show some attrition.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, Pete Rose.
Yeah, but I go back to, like, Pete didn't give a damn. Did he? I mean, of course he wanted to be in the Hall of Fame, but Pete wasn't kissing your ass to go to the Hall of Fame.
Not till later.
Yeah.
Like, at first, he took a very hard stance of, I'm not going to apologize. I belong in. And he did. But yeah, if he would have been a little bit more apologetic about the fact that he gambled on baseball, which he did do and admitted to doing, then maybe it would have happened sooner. You know, there's some other stuff too.
Oh yeah, I mean, Pete's a dirtbag.
Yeah, you know,
Pete Rose a dirtbag.
Tax fraud, statutory rape. Like, it's not like Pete Rose was a good person.
Pete Rose a dirtbag.
Yeah. So now he's dead. And baseball was like, all right, all banned dead people get reinstated, which is pretty wild.
We were waiting for Pete to die.
Yeah. Shoeless Joe Jackson's family's like, come on.
Yeah.
Man's been dead 75 years.
Yeah, we were waiting for Pete to die for a lot of reasons. Now, obviously, this is not because we know there's no gatekeepers like the damn baseball writers for the Hall of Fame. We understand that part about it. But this is a different thing. You got to go through a committee. They're talking about he still might not get in the first time. And the committee votes in like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so
he's got to get 12 of the 16 votes from the Veterans Committee.
Yeah, and that's like in
2 years. Then go to the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And so he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's just back in baseball.
And there's no guarantee that's going to happen.
There's no guarantee.
You know? And so,
there's no guarantee.
That's the first thing I thought about when I saw it. I was like, oh. So when they said shoot, I was like, oh, so they wanted Pete to die, and then they're going to go ahead and reinstate all, not just Pete, all the guys.
I'll be honest. Like, I really do hate when stuff like this happens.
Yes.
Like, as bad of a human as Pete Rose was, like, he belonged in the Hall of Fame, and it probably would have been. I don't know what his family is. I don't know what, like, how many kids or whatever. I don't know anything like that.
His family was pushing really hard.
But I'm sure he has family, and it would have probably been meaningful for them to see him get inducted into the, or at least brought back into the fold before he died.
Right.
This is an extreme example of this situation because it's Pete Rose and he did do a lot of bad stuff. But, like, I always hate when they wait until someone passes away to honor them. Mm-hmm. And it happens every once in a while with the Halls of Fame and things like that. It's like, man, you know, it's still nice for their family and it's still there in the history books and all of that. But it's been pretty cool for the person to get the credit that they deserved while they were still living.
Yeah, but I think the funny thing is, like, you know, they probably want Pete speaking.
No, they didn't.
Yeah. I hope like when they go up there and, you know, because he's going to get in and his family goes up there to represent him or whatever and they get a chance to speak. I hope that he has like a recording or something.
This is the speech.
Pete recorded a
speech 10 years ago just in case. Just he was like, case. I know they're going to let me in after I die. Yes. So when I get inducted. Yes. You play this at my induction ceremony. It's just old angry Pete with his bowl cut.
Yes.
And his bad flat brim hat.
Cussing out everybody.
Nobody looked worse in a hat than Pete Rose.
Oh, man. But yeah, that's what I mean. But yeah, all right.
You know who kind of looks like Pete Rose if he just had a bowl cut? Abe.
I knew you were going to say that.
If Abe would just grow a bowl cut or get a bowl cut like wig for Halloween, he could be Pete Rose.
Nah, he would look like DJ from Roseanne.
A little bit, yeah, but like more grizzled, like Abe looks like he'll dive headfirst into third base for sure.
That wasn't even a dive what Pete did.
No, that was a belly flop.
That's a damn belly flop. Like, why are you jumping so damn high off the ground, man? But I mean, some of them teamed the big red machine. He was on like just outstanding.
Here's what I don't understand about for this conversation, the baseball historians. But this can be applied broadly to historians in general and the way people like to tell history. What's wrong with telling the bad parts of it? Like, yeah. It's okay to tell the bad stuff that happened too. Like, Pete Rose bet on baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also got 4,200 hits.
Yeah.
You can tell both of those things and have him as a part of the museum of baseball because history, which is what the Hall of Fame is.
Because they're both a big part of who Pete Rose was.
Yeah, just like the steroids guys. Like, they did. They took steroids. It wasn't against the rules to do it at that point. It was really fun to watch. We all enjoyed it. Baseball cash checks on it. Let them in the Hall of Fame and have a part of their story be that they were taking crazy amounts of steroids. Like, what's wrong with that? Why can't we just be honest about what happened?
Because they don't want that to taint it. That's why they won't let them in. That's why they.
But not letting them in taints it more. Do they realize that?
No, they don't. No, they don't.
Trying to erase history makes it worse.
They don't care. because if that was the case or whatever, Bonds would be in.
Right. Of course.
A-Rod would be in.
Yeah.
Roger Clemens, they'd be in.
If they thought about it just like that,
then these guys would be in already.
Right.
And you could still have, well, but they also did this. But they won't do that.
They were great.
They won't do that.
And they did this. No. We can have both of those things happen. No, we don't want to do that. We'll just pretend baseball was
perfect.
Perfect.
Clean.
All the whole time. Yep. Everyone was perfect.
Yep.
Dating back to the beginning of it. All right. Let's hear from Tyrese Halliburton, or actually hear Tyrese Halliburton going off last night and sending the Indiana Pacers back to the Eastern Conference Finals for the second consecutive year.
Jerome to the foul line. Shot blocked. Halliburton. He's got the loose ball. He's racing to the other end down the right side to the goal, and he laid it in as he was fouled. A chance for a three-point play.
Wow.
Just a great performance from him and them. And when they needed it, because, you know, the Cavs played pretty good last night. They got off to a good start.
They can't close out anything.
No, I just think those guys are just all so hobbled. Like, they were on adrenaline at the beginning, and you could see it. And then, you know, Garland and Mitchell both just faded as the game went on. But no, that's not to take any credit away from Indiana. They went on like a 19-2 run and put that game away. And they're, again, man, back-to-back years in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's not an accident.
Dude, I think I saw 40-16 in the last 56 games. I mean, that would be good for first in the East.
Yeah.
That's how good they've been. And the difference between this year and last year, Halliburton's fully healthy. He was banged up last year and played because of that dumbass games played to get a certain amount in your contract type thing.
Right,
remember that? And so, I mean, he's such a good player. And they're a good team. They're built so well. And when you look at it, they got two all-star, all-NBA-ish players. And then they got a big man that can do that. They got shooting. They got toughness.
Yeah.
They're playing defense now. But
toughness is the best word. Because I feel like with them, especially dating back to like last year, 2 years ago, they really got tabbed as like a finesse team because they wanted to run, and Halliburton kind of is a bit of a finesse offensive player. Nesmith and Nembhard,
these are tough,
and they got guys coming off the bench that want to guard. Like they're a physical basketball
team.
And
what they do, they play their offensive pace still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the playoffs, things slow down, low scoring. They still like, let's go, man. So they're gonna be a problem. They're gonna be a problem whoever they face. I'm pretty sure that, you know, the Knicks will close it out tonight, but if they don't, they play Saturday? Play Friday? Friday night, Madison Square Garden, mm-hmm. and a closeout game to go to the East Conference Finals. That place is going to be freaking nuts.
Yeah.
Can he, Jaylen Brown, be the guy? You know, can he be the guy? I know he's hobbled and everything. Yeah. Just
it's an interesting situation with the Celtics because obviously we know now Tatum is out. I mean, he had surgery yesterday on the Achilles. He's going to be out for about a year. And even if they won the championship this offseason, it was going to be interesting for the Celtics.
He ain't going nowhere.
No, he's not. He's not. But, I mean, they had a lot of decisions to make anyway just because of their finances. And now their best guy is going to be out next year, too. Yeah. That's tough. I mean, Jaylen Brown was the Finals MVP last year.
That's what everybody tell me. He's the guy. He's the guy.
He's good.
He's a very good player.
He's really good.
He ain't better than Jason Tatum to me. I'm sorry. No. To me, he's not.
No.
But, I mean, I understand he won the MVP and
who
all
would
those
say that.
A lot of folks did.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of folks did.
Oh. No, Jason Tatum's better than Jaylen Brown, but Jaylen Brown's really
Jaylen Brown's
good.
Jaylen Brown's a damn good player. He's got to go. He's got to go, and they got to come along with him. You got to find some kind of – you know, if you got to go get some a B12 shot in the ass, Porzingis or something, all right, to get you some juice, something. Yeah, but they got to, you know, because I think even without Jason, they can win tonight.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think they can win.
I think so, too. I think they're just, you know.
I think they can win tonight.
I think they're very good. Even without Tatum, they still have better depth than the Knicks do.
Yes.
Now, the Knicks might have more top level now with Tatum out, but, like, I think they can get the one tonight. I don't know if they can sneak game six and make it game seven, but I'm not completely counting the Celtics out of the series.
No.
Like, I think the Knicks will win because I think Tatum being hurt is too much to overcome. But if the Celtics kind of nut up and make this thing a series from here, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
They're a tough squad.
They're tough. And if their shot is falling because they're still going to shoot the same volume without Tatum, somebody's going to be in there to take those Tatum threes. If they're going in, but – you know, when you think about what the Knicks have done, they just kept fighting back. Like, I do think the first two games, Boston shot themselves out of the game.
Yeah.
But I think, especially that last game, the Knicks just hung there. I mean, as great as Jason Tatum was, they just couldn't pull away.
That was the one game where I felt like the Knicks genuinely played better than the Celtics. I thought the Celtics played better than the Knicks in the first three games. It doesn't matter. Celtics were down 2-1. So. Yeah. You, I guess, take your moral victory with you, but I thought they played better than them in the first three games. They only won one of them. I thought the Knicks played better in game four. They got to win game five tonight in order to keep it rolling. And then the one series that's actually really good and is seemingly not injury-free because there's no series that's injury-free right now in the NBA playoffs, but dealing with the least amount of injuries. What a game that was last night between the Thunder and the Nuggets. Just a classic.
That damn Joker, man. You can talk about being gassed and everything like that. He was unbelievable last night. Unfreaking believable.
Can I be honest with you about that narrative coming out of games 2 and 3, right? Because he scored 40 and 20.
They're looking at the percentage of it and everything and the volumes of shot. And
does he look – he always looks gassed.
No, but it looks like more the defense they're playing on him than anything like that. Because what they're doing is they're having more bodies around. That's why he's so on the perimeter because – Denver doesn't shoot a high percentage from three, so it's easy to kind of pack back on him and things like that and throw all these bodies at him.
And his percentages are lower than they've ever been. I get that. I'm just saying that people talking about him. He looked gassed last night,
he
too,
was
though.
Outstanding.
Because he always looks gassed.
He was outstanding.
Yeah, it was insane.
OKC, big shot by foul chasing Shea. I don't give a damn.
Oh, no.
Foul chasing Shea.
Huh.
Yeah, he's still a baller, but damn, homie.
He only shot six of them.
And he was searching for more. If you watch how many times he was like going up, going up for, and they did a good job. But yeah, Denver outside of this guy, I think they said they were 1-15 outside Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where's the help at Russ? Oh my goodness gracious, Russ! That was a Russ airball right there.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a Russ airball and everything. But I mean, they're going back to Denver. I think Denver wins this game, and it's going to go game seven.
I think so, too.
I think Denver wins this game.
I think so, too. I mean, it just feels like this series is destined to go seven games. I hope that it does. Oklahoma City just has depth, man. Like, because obviously last night it was Joker and Shea going back and forth, and in the big moments they were trading blows. Difference is Shea just has guys that are carrying the load like the first 40 minutes of the game with him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you had big shots from Jalen Williams last night. Alex Caruso played his ass off.
I love Alex
and he's
Caruso.
Such a nice player. Chet Holmgren had a pretty good first half last night. Like, he just feels to me, I don't know, Jamal Murray's been pretty good, a little bit inconsistent, but pretty good, and he was good last night, although he missed a ton of shots in the second half. It just, Shea has more help. He has more help. Like, yeah, the names maybe aren't as recognizable to people.
They're deeper, younger, role-oriented team.
They just – yeah, they go like – they go 8-9 deep, man, and they play defense. They're – I don't know. I think this series does go 7. I think Oklahoma City gets them, but we're very close to the final four teams in the NBA playoffs being Oklahoma City, Minnesota, Indiana, and the Knicks.
Yeah.
And the Knicks.
And the Knicks.
Which, again, fine. But, like, that's – Minnesota, Oklahoma City, Western Conference Finals is an absolute dream come true.
And I'm pretty sure. I think we talked about this last year. Their stars don't like each other. Shea and Ant ain't the best of buddies.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they ain't the best of buddies. Which I freaking love.
What
even
a
more.
Fun series that would be. Which obviously, I love even more. You know, they both have to get through before they do that.
Is
Steph Curry going to play tonight?
No,
that's official.
Oh, they know there's not been an official anything. I just don't think he plays tonight.
Oh, this says he's out. I just hadn't seen it.
Yeah, I don't think he plays.
Is he ruled out?
Yeah. I haven't heard he's in.
I haven't heard either way. If he doesn't play, that series is over tonight.
In Minnesota, unless Jimmy's got to go 45 tonight.
You feel like Ant-Man's a little mad because he doesn't get to beat Steph? Like, he wants to make the West Finals, yes. But like he really wants to beat all these stars
He'll
on the way,
say something.
Too. He would love for Steph to be on the court and beat him and go to the West Finals.
He'll
All right,
something.
We'll get to an NFL No Huddle coming up next. Kick off the noon hour. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped death at the hands of the Manson family? But what about the real-life brutal murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.